All right, Charles, so what do you have for me today?
Hold up, dude. There's no banter today? We're just going to dive right in?
I'll be honest. I'm having a tough time relating to labor laws and compliance.
All right, look, I'll admit it's not the sexiest topic in the world when it comes to remote work, but it's super duper important. In fact, it's something that could make or break a business as its market expands.
Right, well, fine. Let's get into it then.
We shall, but before that, hello and welcome back to A Startup's Guide to Remote Talent. My name's Charles Ferguson and I'm the APAC General Manager at GP, and my co-host is Tech in Asia Studios Managing Editor Nathaniel Federo. In this podcast mini-series, Nat and I explore the new age of hiring and how businesses of today and tomorrow can navigate the talent economy of the future. And today, we're going to talk about what companies with remote work teams need to know about labor laws and compliance.
So who's the expert you spoke to for today's episode, Charles?
None other than Raymond Ong, head of human resources at Singapore-headquartered parenting platform, The Parent Inc.
Well, I've been in human resources for over 20 years.
Right on.
And the last 7 years as part of senior management. Mm. And most of my career has been with finance.
Oh,
but
interesting.
The last few years have been with a lot of startups. Mm. And the latest stint is with The Parent Inc.
Oh, The Parent Inc. I know them. I interviewed the company's founder, Roshni Mathani, on Startup Snapshot a couple of years ago.
Then you'll absolutely be familiar with the next minutes of this dialogue. But for our listeners' benefit, before we get into discussion on labor laws and compliance, let's first dive into the story of The Parent Inc.
The Parent Inc. started, it was founded in 2009 by our group CEO, Roshni Mathani Shong.
Yes.
And she started it as a parent blog. Because back then, she needed information as regards to her own pregnancy.
Yeah.
And she couldn't find any. So
crazy.
It was just strange that during that time, I mean, you know, with the internet booming and everything,
yeah,
with all this information at your fingertips, you didn't have information that can specifically help parents.
Yes.
So Roshni started it, the Asian Parent platform.
Yeah.
And the focus was in Southeast Asia.
Mm.
So she grew the company. She established 7 offices in 7 countries.
Right away, or was that a process?
It was, of course, a process.
Yeah.
And what was interesting as well is the content.
Mm.
So she created local content in 11 different languages, because of course the variety of cultures and languages in Southeast Asia alone, of course, is also daunting. So she managed to do that, and then through the years, as the company grew, you know, from her to 30 to 100, and presently, just last April, we acquired Webtrato in Vietnam.
Yes,
and right now, that brings us to over 500 talented, strong employees.
Wow.
In Southeast Asia.
What a story, man.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Then when the pandemic hit in 2020, The Parent Inc. had to adapt, just like many other businesses out there. The difference was that the company was already kind of familiar with the concept of remote working. And on Raymond's end, he also saw some other companies were taking a bit of the wrong approach.
The challenge back then was every company had to do remote work, whether they liked it or not.
That's right.
And the difference now is, well, who was ready for it? And if you were somehow planting the seeds of it before that, then you would have had an advantage with regards to adapting to that new normal.
Right.
We were fortunate at The Parent Inc. that we were already planting seeds that was going to support remote work. Back then, and of course, Charles, you know, you can share with me what your thoughts about remote work. Management thought of remote work more like a reward. It's like,
yeah,
well,
I recall that.
If we had employees who proven that they're performers.
Yes.
And that you can you can let them, you know, you can empower them.
Yes.
And have them do their work on their own. Then remote work was something to consider.
Yes.
Some companies, they were also moving towards that type of arrangement through hot desking. Of course, there's pros and cons to hot desking.
For sure.
Back then, the thought about remote work is really more of as a reward.
Yep. It was a perk.
It was a perk. All of a sudden, it was part of work. It was
It was work.
So how do you adjust to that? Yeah. With the Parent Inc., we were lucky because seeds were planted. One of which was the OKR framework, which is objectives and key results.
Yep.
Framework. So that one was in place. We were already doing flexible work. Mm. And during that time as well, we were digitally transforming our performance review and talent development.
Very cool.
There was no getting around technology. You had to be leveraging off of whatever technology that was available.
Yeah.
It was also fortunate as well, something simple as assigning laptops.
Yep.
So since our employees had laptops, then they didn't necessarily have to go to the office because some people are assigned their desktops.
Right.
And then now you're stuck.
That's right.
Because how are you going to work if you have to work on a desktop that's at the office?
That's right.
So it helped us. It helped us adapt faster. Mm. To those lockdowns, and helped us transition to remote work faster.
Right. So like Prodigy from the previous episode, the Parent Inc. was an early adopter of the remote work culture.
That's right. Now I bring all of this up because what this means, the Parent Inc. has about a decade of experience in the remote work, while Raymond on his own has twice that. So all told, when it comes to labor laws and compliance for businesses with remote employees, these guys are literally experts. In fact, to Raymond, compliance is just a fundamental.
I see compliance as governance.
Yeah.
And I see that as business fundamentals.
Yes.
That every organization, especially the ones who want to scale, have to have. Mm. Especially the ones who want to expand in different markets. That becomes very important.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at governance and you're looking at compliance, of course, an important aspect of that is compliance to local regulations.
Yes.
And what was also something that helped us when we were expanding is establishing those local offices. Because if you have those local offices, then the employees that you hire in those countries are now covered by that locally registered entity.
Yes.
And therefore, you ensure a fundamental requirement, which is the compliance of locally mandated regulations.
Exactly correct.
So we were fortunate
with
regards to having the ability to establish those offices.
Yes.
I mentioned about the seven offices. Of course, there's the Singapore, which is the general headquarters. We also have one in Malaysia, in India, Thailand, the Philippines, and Vietnam, and
there's another country. Are you guys in Indonesia?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Charles. Yeah. Yes. And we're in Indonesia.
That's a huge market for you guys, I would imagine.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes. So we, having those offices helps us.
For sure.
A lot. What you want to be careful, not just on the local regulations, but what you also want to be careful about is tax obligations.
Yes.
And that helps us, having those offices to be able to address that. However, we understand that you can't necessarily as well establish a local office
in every
all
single
the country,
country on the
that you want exactly that you want to operate in.
Yes.
So that is something we'd like to, of course, further explore down the line.
Yeah.
But we're very aware and, you know, very clear that in any country that we operate in, then of course we need to be compliant to the local regulations of that country.
Right, so Raymond knows his stuff.
100% he does. And one thing he mentioned that stuck with me is how, beyond just looking at the fundamental part of running the business, compliance with regulations is also an attractive quality in an employer.
The side that deals with the regulations and the,
payroll and benefits administration and all that kind
of
thing.
It's just part of doing business.
Yeah.
You want to be able to address it properly. You want to be able to also have that fundamental, that strong fundamental in place so that you can leverage off of it when you're scaling, especially when you're moving to a new market or a new country. I totally get what you mean, how someone gets lost in the next passion project and how these things, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, do sound mundane and very administrative and the type of things that especially a visionary leader who's already looking 10 years ahead wouldn't really have the patience to deal with these things.
It's true, right? I mean, we have to call that out, right?
Yes, which is why it becomes important, of course, that you hire the right people to take care of those things for you.
That's right. Or may, if I may be so bold,
yes.
Or partner with the right people.
Oh yes,
right.
Yes, that's a better word actually. To partner with the people that can help you on that.
Yes,
and it just goes back to anytime you want to expand to scale, it has to align with not just the company's mission or vision, but it also has to align to your culture, to your performance standards.
Absolutely.
And of course, long-term business goals. And if those things are clear to you, then it makes it easier to create the structures to be able to scale that approach. When you set about culture and finding that compliance to find and partner with similar-minded individuals,
yes,
it still goes back to those mundane tasks of putting the structure together.
Yes.
Regarding having a end-to-end recruitment process that not only helps you find these people,
right,
but are efficient and sustainable and scalable, connecting to your onboarding, where when that person comes in, you want to be able to start off on the right foot. I don't want to fall into too much HR jargon, but now you're looking at the whole employee journey.
That's right.
Which starts at the first point of contact.
Yep.
To a potential colleague and partner. And of course, ends with the offboarding, because especially nowadays, in the old days, people would have just one job throughout their whole life.
Employment for life, man.
That
was the gig.
Yeah, but that was so, so far away. I mean, you're probably going to be working for three or four companies in your career.
Certainly.
Which means that shift had to happen wherein you can't expect people to work with you for the rest of their life.
Right.
Which means you have to factor in that eventually that person is going to leave you.
Yes.
And you want to be able to complete the end-to-end employee journey in a way that, of course, you may have heard HR professionals like to call it EX, employee experience.
Totally.
They'd like to, you know, have it, you know, at its most positive level. My opinion is, at the very least, if we can make that end-to-end employee journey professional,
yes,
that we have professionally interacted with someone and given them the courtesy as professionals, as adults, then I believe that we have already achieved our mission if we can do that from end to end. It's a small world. You never know if you will cross paths again.
Exactly right.
You never know if that person is going to work for you again.
True.
It would be great, actually, if they come back.
Absolutely.
So you want to be able to create that environment where that is possible.
For sure.
What the common mistake that most people do is they burn bridges.
Yeah, man.
That's not thinking of it long term.
No.
Right. And that seems to go beyond just labor laws and compliance, but into, again, a company's values and culture.
You're absolutely right. And on the other end of things, compliance really helps with keeping companies and their founders out of trouble. The problem is there's just so many different regulations to abide by when you're a business with a global or a regional presence.
Coming from the finance industry,
yeah.
Charles, there's a lot of things that don't surprise me. What I mean by that is with regards to dealing with regulators.
Yeah, man, I can imagine.
So you just had to come in and
eyes
see.
Wide open, right?
Yeah, with eyes wide open. Well, you know, what's going on in a particular country?
Sure.
It was always unique to see the differences.
Yeah.
At the same time, there's also, you know, I mean, like, for example, every labor law in every country is predicated on the same fundamentals.
Yes.
Due process, fair treatment of employees. So that unites all the other countries.
I'll be real with you, Charles. My tiny brain is feeling very overwhelmed just imagining the amount of things I'd have to deal with if I were ever in Raymond's position.
Well, don't worry. Raymond shared a few tips with me for you and everyone else listening in.
The tips that I can share, which to me are important, but I have to warn you, Charles, and also warn the listeners as well. Yeah. They're not sexy.
No. And we've already covered that, right?
They're not sexy.
We know it's not sexy, but they sure are important.
And some people will say, well, you know, that's common sense. But I just have to be able to reiterate that when you're expanding to a new market, when you're leveraging off of remote work, when you're looking at expanding your workforce in different markets, you do have to know your business model.
Yeah.
Most especially the strengths of your business model. Mm. That's one. The second is you also need to know the roles in your business model.
Yes.
The deliverables of your business model, especially the critical ones.
Yes.
Two more that I can share. One is you want to be able to align. Mm. It comes back to what we discussed earlier, where yes, I'm moving to a new market, but it still has to align to my company's mission, vision, culture, long-term business goals. But if there's one thing also that maybe is something that people haven't been harping on a lot is you do need to leverage off of two important things. One is your business fundamentals.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what we were talking about, the governance and the compliance and all the other things that make up those fundamentals. And technology. You do need to be able to leverage off of technology, especially when you're doing remote work. If we didn't digitally transform how we do our performance reviews, it would be very, very difficult to manually figure out how work is being done in the organization, especially in offices that are outside Singapore.
Okay, that does help make it a lot simpler.
Exactly. And just in case any listeners out there were inspired by Raymond sharing so far and want to venture into the HR profession, we ended our conversation on a note that I think could really help you take that leap.
Just to add to what you said, Charles, about it may not sound sexy, but it is exciting.
Yeah.
Depending on how you look at it.
Yes.
What I just want to be able to remind colleagues and stakeholders and, you know, our listeners is you can't get around the work.
Yeah.
You just can't get around it.
That's right. Sweeter after difficulty.
Yes. The word I'd like to use is earn.
Right on.
That happens with experience. What I mean by that is going through difficult, complex situations makes you earn that experience. And the skills that you learn is something that you earned.
Yes.
And then therefore, whatever happens from now to the future, it sticks with you.
Yeah.
And no one can take it away from you. But the thing is, it's not just going to be handed to you. You have to earn it. And part of earning it is going through what people may think as boring and mundane. Unfortunately, and this is where, you know, the bad news comes in, you can't get around it. But the good news is when you do, then you've earned a real skill, real experience that you can leverage off for the rest of your career.
That's a nice note to end on.
It really is.
So if I can sum it all up, identify your business model and strengths, be clear on local regulations, and I guess just hire someone like Raymond to help you figure it all out.
You could do that. And you could also just get in touch with us here at GP, where we can help you wade through all of that regulatory muck.
Of course.
Anyway, Nat, this brings us to the end of the series. To everyone who's stuck around since episode one, thank you so much for listening to A Startup's Guide to Remote Talent, a Tech in Asia podcast produced in partnership with GP. If you haven't caught the other episodes, check them out. Nat and I touched on everything else you need to know about the future of the remote talent economy with a few special guests. Lastly, if you're on an app that lets you, go ahead and leave us 5 stars for the review. It really helps us out.
And speaking of special guests, we've got to give special thanks to the Parent Inc. team and Raymond Ong for his expert knowledge and the comprehensive manner in which he shared it with us on this episode. We'll put links to his LinkedIn profile in the show notes if you want to get in touch with him.
That's right. And if you're a business owner or a business leader and you need or want some assistance in figuring out your remote talent strategy, visit GP's website at www.g-p.com and we'll be sure to help you out. With that, I've been Charles.
And I'm Nat. Thanks for tuning in.